is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, Dr. Dish Basketball is ringing in the new year with big savings. This January, buy one Dr. Dish, get one free, or unlock exclusive single-unit discounts during their 2024 Super Sale. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Izzy Santiago Jr., varsity coach at Lutheran West High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are going to talk a little NBA. Tonight we had the MVP race, Embiid versus Jokic.
Embiid wins this round.
I think that both his team and Embiid's performance, although Jokic did not come through in any way as a slouch in this particular game, pulled down 20 rebounds and poured in 25 points. But he did. I watched the last 8 minutes of this game, and coming down the stretch, Jokic missed two relatively open threes that he normally knocks down. Denver had another turnover, and Philly kind of left the door open for them to get back in it, and they just couldn't quite get back over the hump. Embiid hit a couple of elbow jumpers that were big baskets. And it's funny when you watch Embiid play, how much time now he just spends at the elbows, at the top of the key, and they just isolate him there. And he's become so good just shooting the ball off the jab, 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 and then he just pulls up and shoots it. And then I think the big thing with Embiid is just the fact that he's like an 85% plus free throw shooter, not only for this season, but in his career. And that really sets him apart when you think about dominant big guys. Obviously, Jokic shoots the ball at the foul line very well as well. But when you think back historically to great big men, you don't see very many guys at Embiid's size that are shooting 87, 88% from the free throw line like he's doing. And that really is something that is a huge weapon and a huge advantage for him and the Sixers. And I'm going to continue to maintain the stance that I've always maintained, that I don't know until he proves it that you can count on Embiid to play 42 minutes in a major game in the playoffs and do that week after week after week, series after series after series. But as far as how this guy's playing right now in the regular season, he's leading the league in scoring at close to 35 a game. And it seems like every night he's just, when he's out there, he's dominant. And he's been dominant against bad teams. He's been dominant against good teams.
Yep.
You can't argue with how well he's playing. I mean, tonight he went 39 minutes against Joker and put up 41, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. So clearly won that duel, not only on the individual basis, but because the Sixers won. And it'll be interesting to see how this MVP race continues to develop and unfold as the season goes along. I think Denver's going to be right at the top of the Western Conference, and Philly, I don't know that they're going to catch Boston or Milwaukee. I think they're probably fairly solidly locked into third if I had to guess, but who knows? Do you think anybody else can really realistically get in on this besides these two guys?
I don't think so, Mike. Just the big thing is this, like, I don't know. I'd have to look at like games played. Has Embiid missed a lot of games?
He's missed 10.
And you're allowed to miss how many?
You can miss 17. So he has to play – he can only miss 7 of their next 44 to qualify.
Ooh, boy.
Which is dicey. Which is dicey.
Whereas Jokic hasn't hardly missed any, right? He's missed like a handful.
Well, see, I'm guessing, yeah, he maybe has sat out a game or two. Let me look at Jokic's games played here if I can find it quick while you're talking. But yeah, that's going to be something that it's going to be something to watch as we go through the season. Like I was reading an article today that talked about how if you go back through last year's all NBA, and I know obviously the rule wasn't in place, so guys weren't incentivized in the same way.
Yeah.
But it was talking about Siakam and how Siakam was the 9th forward in the all NBA voting. And there were 3 guys ahead of him, I believe LeBron, Durant, and man, the last name eludes me, but basically Siakam would have been the 6th forward all NBA if that 65 player rule would have been in effect, or 65 game rule would have been in effect.
Yeah.
And that would have guaranteed Siakam a supermax, which it's kind of crazy when you start looking at how much that stuff impacts money. And I know that's where it makes some guys feel uncomfortable.
Speaking of Siakam, Mike. The trade
Jokic
machine.
40 games played.
Out
and
of.
The Nuggets are, let's see, what are they, 28-14. So
they've
he's missed two games.
Oh, he's missed two games.
He's in much better shape. I mean, he's 7/10 of an assist away from a triple double right now, Jokic. So
yeah, I don't see him getting to that threshold unless he was to suffer a catastrophic injury. And if that was the case, then he's not winning the MVP anyways, right? I mean,
agreed.
So here's the thing, okay? I don't think there's anyone else in the NBA that can touch the MVP situation. I think we're pretty locked in. It's a 2-horse race, guy. Like, I think if Giannis didn't have Dame and the Bucks were playing as well, then I could make the argument. But Dame's playing well enough to make. I don't want to say like Giannis's stat line looks somewhat diminished. You know, of course, yesterday he had that, or was that 2 days ago now, Mike? Was that last night or was that the Dame Lillard?
2 days ago, I believe. 2 days ago, I believe.
Yeah, the Dame Lillard Dame Time 3-pointer. How do you let him get that much of a running head start? That's terrible.
I don't know.
That's terrible.
If you're
coaching.
Kings, I don't know. Kings, I'm not sure what to make of the Kings. There's a lot of trade talk.
Kings have had two bad games in a row, Mike.
Exactly. Well, they blew a 12-point lead going into the fourth tonight. The laptop.
That was pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. That was pretty good.
That was.
I sent you. I know I sent you the video with the laptop. Did I send you the video of him just going like this? Like someone had taken the whole 2 minutes and 30 seconds and like. Condense it to like.
I don't know if I saw that.
Seconds.
I don't know if I saw that. Yeah, I don't know.
It
if
was
I
just
saw
him
that.
Going like this, and it was with like the Curb Your Enthusiasm music behind it. It's
nice.
Pretty good.
There you go.
Anyways.
Hey, yeah, so Giannis right now. So Giannis, 35 minutes a game. He's played 39 games, 31.2 points a game, 11.4 rebounds, and 5.9 assists. And let's see what he shoots.
Sorry, Jokic yawns at those stats. It's not close enough to a triple double for him.
Giannis is shooting 60% from the field, 23% from the floor or from three, and he's at 67% from the line, which is probably right in line about his career average, but I think it's maybe better than he's been the last couple of years.
Maybe you shouldn't shoot threes, Giannis. You're shooting 23%.
Yeah, probably
maybe.
He's only shooting 1.7 threes per game, though, so he's not doing a very high volume, which understandably so. His volume of threes should probably – likely be zero.
I could make a comment about what we were talking about pre-podcast, but I'm going to refrain from that, Mike.
I understand. Got you. I think Giannis could climb in, and I think the only other guy statistically I think there's 2 other guys now that I think about it. I think Luka, if Dallas was to get into the top 3, I think Luka – look, I don't think he's going to win it, but statistically he's got to be there. And then if – Oklahoma City somehow comes in first in the West. Shea, I know he doesn't have the same level of stardom that these other guys have, but it's really hard to believe that if Oklahoma City were to somehow get the number one seed, and even them being number two, I mean, when you start talking about them being that high and what Shai is doing, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Shai's right above Giannis in scoring. He's averaging 31.3, 5.8 rebounds, 6.3 assists. And as a guard, he's shooting 55% from the floor.
Yeah. Listen,
he's going to be right
valid,
there.
What's it? They're valid points. I just don't think he has the star power to get it, Mike. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. And I mean, like, listen, if they finish first, how many times, if they finish first, he could get it.
How many times?
If they
how many
first,
times
he'd have a chance?
How many times have you watched? I mean, they're on TNT right now, and I've caught bits and pieces of the game. How many times have you watched Oklahoma City Thunder play basketball this year? My answer is, if I count the bits and pieces that I've watched tonight, it's three, and that was the two times they played the Cavs in this game that I've seen bits and pieces of, because the Thunder aren't even broadcast on TV. They're not even on national TV.
That's about to change starting next season. I feel pretty confident that this team is going to be good for a long time.
They better be predominantly featured. I mean, like, it's bizarre to me that, like, there are some teams that just, I understand that, like, the Lakers are going to get a lot of games and the Clippers, but it's just bizarre to me that there are some other teams that are just not, like, focused. Oh, I didn't know. Ooh, there's an 8:30 ABC game tomorrow, Mavericks Lakers, Mike. I'm just trying to see these national TV games. Like tomorrow, Thursday night's game. They should swap this. Like, why wouldn't, like, here's what you don't do, Mike. You don't play this TNT game. This is the TNT game. Memphis at Timberwolves. Yeah, sweet. The Timberwolves are awesome to watch. But now you've got Ja Morant, Desmond Bane out for the Grizzlies. Like, this game, this 10 o'clock game, sounds way better. Pacers, Kings. That sounds a lot nicer, Mike. I don't know about you think, but I think Pacers, Kings is more intriguing to me than Grizzlies, Timberwolves. And then the 7:30 game, the early game, my God, who made this scheduled, this game? Bulls, Raptors? This is a national televised game?
You got to get everybody on TV at some point, man.
Yeah, but my God, that's a terrible lineup.
Is that Thursday?
That's Thursday. You're not going to be watching TNT on that night. Find
Cavs
something.
Bucks tomorrow on ESPN.
Yeah, that's good news. That's a good one. We'll see what happens. And then Friday night's game? The Friday night's games are good. Okay, I can buy those games. You know, but I'm just saying, like, we got to get some of these other teams more involved. Like, I don't know what you can do, but like I said, I just don't think the Thunder have the whole genesis of the conversation was, I don't think the Thunder have the star power because they're not predominantly featured. Like, you and me who listen to, like, basketball podcasts and, like, Simmons, Lowe, Miss the Mismatch, you know, they're geeking out about the Thunder, but, like, the average NBA consumer, if I went to people at school and asked them, and I know there's people that watch NBA, like, name two or three players on the Thunder, I don't think there are people could do it. I don't think I could ask any of my students that follow the NBA. They might be able to give me one player that is on the Thunder, maybe two. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit, Mike, but I just don't think there's enough, you know, like, push to have them, because there's just not. I mean, have you ever seen anyone wearing a Thunder jersey that was not Kevin Durant or Russell Westbrook?
Probably not.
Like, maybe
I haven't seen too many Gilgeous Alexander jerseys, I have to admit.
Like, I'm just trying to think who else from the Oklahoma City Thunder would have been focused? Like, who else could we get?
Chris Paul? Russell Westbrook? Paul George? No?
No.
All right, let me take it. Hey, all right. So, look, Shai's really, really good. I don't think he's going to win the MVP, but if Oklahoma City gets the one, he's going to get some votes. Let's put it that way. What's interesting is that usually you have best player, best team. That guy usually finishes first or maybe second in the MVP. And right now you're looking at Jason Tatum, right? Best player, on the best team. Celtics are 28-9. I think it's pretty much consensus that, at least from the regular season standpoint, that Boston is probably going to end the season with the best record. And yet, whenever I hear Tatum being discussed, and when you look at his statistics compared to these other guys at the top, don't get me wrong, Tatum's having a great year. He's 27, 8.5, 4.5 assists. He's shooting 47% from the field. Clearly what he brings defensively and his versatility. But I feel like I've been saying this for 2, 3, 4 years that I don't think Tatum is that guy. I don't think he's good enough to put a team on his back night in and night out and win you an NBA championship. And he hasn't been consistent enough to this point to be able to do that. Now, he's been capable of huge performances, and he had that 50 spot against the Bucks in game 6, and he had that other 50-point game. I forget when was that. Was that against the Sixers? I think he had a 50-point game against the Sixers last year. But then he also has had games where he just hasn't been to the level that the Celtics need him. Now, the question becomes, and we don't have to answer this obviously today, we're not going to, but can Boston win with this ensemble cast where they may be in a situation where they're in a series where they don't have the best player for multiple series in a row? And is their cast of characters enough to be able to take them to an NBA title? That hasn't usually proven to be the case. Usually it's one guy elevating his teammates and therefore his team. So it remains to be seen whether this formula works for the Celtics, but Tatum is getting absolutely zero buzz. Okay,
so here's my question, MVP, Mike.
None.
I'm gonna jump ahead here. I'm gonna pull a little bit of what we talked about last week. I'm trying to with the Browns trying to figure out playoff seeding. That went really well. Okay,
yeah,
so if I'm the Cavaliers, if of the three teams that are above me right now, Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, which of those three teams do you want to see in the second round? My vote is still Boston, right?
No, I want to see Philadelphia.
Okay.
No track record of playoff success. You got Maxey, who is in his first year as the 1B to Embiid's 1A. And then you have the threat of Embiid's injury or underperformance. To me, it's clearly Philadelphia. That's who I would want to play if I could, clearly.
Okay. I just don't
see. Why Boston? What's your argument for Boston?
I just don't think we match up well against Philadelphia. I feel like we match up better against Boston. Like, size-wise, like who's guarding Embiid for us? I mean, Embiid's going to probably drop.
Nobody's guarding Embiid. If you're getting the Embiid we saw tonight, whatever, nobody's guarding him. But I think when you look at what the Cavs have, look, when Embiid goes down on the block, which he just doesn't do that very much anymore. He's honestly not on the block all that much. He's
probably because he's trying
often
to avoid injury, right?
Well, maybe, but I think he's just more effective. The dude just can shoot it. Like, he squares up and he's 7'2" and he just shoots right over the top of guys. And so they're setting him up a ton at the elbows, at the nail, and he's got the ball, and then he's kind of orchestrating from there. I mean, he had 10 assists tonight. I think him and Maxey are really starting to continue to develop their chemistry, pick and rolls and dribble handoffs. And Embiid is just so big that he makes it really difficult to defend those two guys. And Maxey's so fast, and he's so good going downhill. And, of course, he can pull up for threes as well. So I just think that it's not a case where Embiid is in a low post and he's just beating up dudes, where Jared Allen's relative lack of bulk could really hurt him. That's not to say that Philly and Nick Nurse couldn't completely change their strategy against the Cavs and put Embiid on the low block, because he's still a devastating low post player. But he's spending a lot more time this regular season up at the high post and doing things from there. And the reality is, not many teams have the right personnel to be able to deal with Joel Embiid when he's at his best. The question is, and this is why I would choose to play them, is I'm not sure, is he going to be at his best come playoff time? Because he hasn't proven that to be the case at any point in his career. So versus the Celtics, Tatum and Brown have proven to be really durable. They're going to be out on the floor. You look at the Cavs, the best version of the Cavs you bring Mobley and Garland back, and you're starting 2 6-1 guards, and Strus is your small forward. That doesn't seem like a good matchup for the Celtics to me. I'd rather deal with Embiid and take my chances with Jared Allen on the team's best player, rather than trying to figure out who the heck's guarding Tatum and Brown. Not to say anything of the two bigger guards they got in the backcourt who are physical and tough and really good defenders. So I know the Cavs have played Boston well, especially last year. So I'm not saying you're completely off base and you might actually be right, but I'd just rather see Philadelphia based on Embiid's history in the playoffs and based on Maxey's sort of ascension this year into that prime role for the first time.
I mean, completely makes sense, Mike. I will argue that I just feel like, I don't know, something about Boston. I feel like we could beat them.
I understand. I get it.
I want vengeance for 2010. I don't know why I'm going back that far at this point.
Okay. All right.
But I kind of want to go back to take vengeance for 2010, you know, them ripping that, because, I mean, we get through that series. I think we win that. They stole the Kobe LeBron finals from us, right? That would have been Kobe LeBron. That would have been the opportunity to see Kobe and LeBron in the finals would have been fantastic. I think the Cavs probably I think we could win that, would have won the series in my opinion. But once again, that's going back in time. I don't know if LeBron, and then what would have happened? Would have LeBron stayed or would have he gone? I think he would have stayed, right? I think he stays if we win the championship in 2010.
Better chance.
I'm not trying to write revisionist history here, Mike, but I want to avenge.
But you are.
I want to avenge
2010 Cavs. Bring on the Celtics.
Bring on the Celtics. All right. Anyways. all right. So I kind of alluded to this earlier. We're going to jump to the trade rumor, Mike. You want to talk? Let's talk trade rumor really quickly.
Sure.
The Pascal Siakam to the Indiana Pacers trade rumor. And here's the supposed rumor. It was originally tweeted by Shams, I saw. And the trade would be this. it would be 30 first round picks.
30?
Buddy Hield. No, 30 first round
picks?
No, oh, three. I thought
you said 30 first round picks. That's a lot of first round picks.
No, that's only Deshaun Watson. Three first round picks.
Three two first teams round, we lost to, by the way.
Yeah. Three first-round picks, Bruce Brown Jr., because they feel like they have to include – yeah, Bruce Brown Jr. And I saw Buddy Hield's name floated in that trade too. Is that too much for Pascal Siakam? Is that too much for
Pascal Siakam? It feels like it is, man. I like Siakam okay, but, man, I don't know. I think Siakam's like 29 years old. He's going to be due for a contract extension, which means I'm probably paying him for 4 years. And I know he can't make the supermax, so you're not paying him $300 million, but you're probably going to pay him 4 years, like 200 and some million. I mean, clearly he's your second best player if you trade him to Indiana. So you got Halliburton as your one and Siakam as your two. If I'm Indiana, I don't know what that – I'm not sure what that does for me. It raises my ceiling, I guess, a little bit this year. But Siakam and Halliburton, does that make you better than Philly, Boston, or Milwaukee? I kind of don't think so. Does it make you better than the Cavs?
I don't think so. No, Pascal Siakam's never done anything against the Cavs. Get out of here.
I think the best version of the Cavs is better than that team. And so then you look at it and you say, okay, Siakam over the course of that 4 years, is he getting better over those 4 years or is he getting worse? From age 30 to 34, I would say he's probably getting worse. Now, Halliburton's going to continue to get better, but unless I could get Pascal Siakam for a bargain basement price, which I don't know what that is, but I know that three first-round picks is not a bargain basement price. So if I'm Toronto, I think I'd do that in a second because, again, Toronto is in this weird spot where they already traded Ananobi. Now you've got this core with Quickley and Barrett and Scottie Barnes. I can totally see why they want to trade Siakam. If they could get three first round picks from Indiana plus Hield plus Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good haul for Toronto. And if I'm Indiana, that to me, that price seems too rich. That seems like a trade I'm going to regret. A, because it's not going to make me as good as I think it's going to make me. And B, because now I got to sign Siakam to a big extension. And I would rather not tie up my money in Pascal Siakam for the next 4 years if I was the Pacers. I think I'd rather go another direction, try to find somebody who's maybe a little younger, fits closer to Halliburton's timeline. To me, Siakam doesn't move the needle. He doesn't make me materially better. If he's so good, then why is Toronto six games below 500 or whatever they are? I think he's your third or fourth best guy. And I don't want to pay a guy who's my third or fourth best guy $220 million over 4 or 5 years. I just don't.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I think once again, these are lateral moves for a team, and I just don't see Pascal Siakam. Yeah, he's a nice piece, but he isn't moving the needle, in my opinion. He's just not doing it, and they need someone that's gonna move the needle. Like, they have Halliburton, I get that, but I just don't see how. To me, listen, I think Hield's the perfect player to play alongside Halliburton, because when Halliburton gets to the lane and kicks it, Hield's ready to shoot. He's ready to, you know, is he the best shooter? No, but if he's on, I just don't see Siakam in the fit. Like, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I just don't see the fit on that.
I don't trust Siakam as a shooter, number one. I don't see him being a great spot-up shooter. And he's probably career, I would guess he's probably around a 35% three-point shooter. And he's also a guy who likes to have the ball and kind of do stuff with the ball, meaning he's not like, boom, I catch and I go. It's like he likes to catch and kind of herky-jerky and spin his way to the basket. And when you're playing with Halliburton, the guy you want with the ball kind of going herky-jerky and doing things with it is Halliburton. I don't want Siakam. I don't want to take touches as a playmaker away from Halliburton to give the ball to Pascal Siakam. So I think there's got to be a better – to me, I feel like there's got to be a better fit in Indiana.
What do you think Siakam's three-point shooting percentage is for his career? I looked it up.
I said 35%.
32.
So it's even worse than I thought.
And this year is bad. He's hit 31.
I just don't think Siakam is good enough to give up three number one draft picks. I just don't think he makes you that much better. I really don't.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, but like I said, I don't think he elevates you into the top four in the East just by virtue of having by having Siakam and Halliburton.
Yeah.
Siakam turns 30 in April. So like I said, you're going to pay him from age 30 to 34. He's going to make a lot of money over the next 4 years. And he's a good player, but I think if he's your number two, I'm not sure how good you are. Conversely, I guess the argument if you're Indiana is you're never getting a free agent to come to Indiana. It's sort of similar to the Cavs. You're not getting a top 15-ish, 20th, 25th, wherever you think Siakam ranks in the league. You're not getting a guy probably of that caliber to sign as a free agent with the Pacers. So maybe you're looking at it, if you're Indiana, in a similar vein that the Cavs looked at the Donovan Mitchell trade, where maybe we're giving up a little bit too much, but this guy's available and players of this caliber don't come available all the time. Yeah. I think Mitchell's a better player than Siakam and move the needle more for the Cavs than what Siakam would do for the Pacers. But I think that's the argument that you're making if you're the Pacers is, when are we going to get another crack at a guy who's this good we're not free agency. We have to do this via trade, or we've got to build a guy, get a guy through the draft. And so I guess I could see it from that standpoint. At the same time, I just don't know if Siakam would be the guy I'd be targeting. I don't know who would be better as far as guys are on the market. Siakam right now might be the best all-around player that theoretically we've heard is available. But I don't think he makes Indiana that much better where I would give up three number one picks plus a couple of players. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Mike, you know what? So I was thinking here about Masai Ujiri trying to come up with these trades for the Toronto Raptors. And I think maybe he could benefit from some magic mind, Mike. What do you think? You think that would be helpful for him?
It might. It might help him to focus and see if he could look around a league and find a better fit than Pascal Siakam, plus having to pay him. I think that magic mind might help him to scour the rosters, and he could stay up late at night like we do recording this podcast. I think we started tonight. We haven't started after midnight in quite a while, but tonight we did. And I know that since you and I started trying magic mind, that it's really, I think, helped us. Maybe our audience doesn't think so, but I feel like we've been much more dialed in here the last couple of weeks since we got affiliated with Magic Mind. And
Mike, I found that your interviews have been more dialed in and focused, and you've been more seemingly just more focused. Not that you're not weren't focused before, but like I just feel like you've been more. I don't know. It's more on time. Like you were more within our time constraints because you were focused on.
I understand. That is true.
Things going for sure.
That is true. Well, here's what I'll say is, since we started using it, I can speak from my own experience that it's really helped me to be able to focus in when I got to dial in. And I'm usually up. Anybody who knows me or has listened to the podcast knows that most of the podcast work that I do is after hours when everybody goes to bed. So to be able to have magic mind on my side. Yeah, exactly. To be able to have magic mind on my side, it just really helps me to focus and concentrate. And when I sit down in front of the computer to do what it is that I need to do, it's 100% natural, and it really helps me to get done what I need to get done. So if you have a chance to get out and pick up some Magic Mind, you can do that at magicmind.com/JanHoopheads. That's J-A-N Hoopheads. And you get 1 month free when you subscribe for 3 months. And then you want to use the code HOOPHEADS20. So again, that's magicmind.com/JAN HOOPHEADS and use the code HOOPHEADS20 to get started with Magic Mind.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk. We kind of alluded to the Cavs a little bit. I want to talk about the Cavs briefly. We don't have to talk too long about the Cavs because we do seemingly talk about the Cavs every episode because that's our team. But we're going to talk briefly about the Cavs. The Cavs, they win the big pair. They have a great week in Paris, right? They had a good week in Paris last week. Yep, and they come home and they take care of business because they've only played two games since we last recorded. Okay. But Mike, when this homestand started, we said if you go 5-1, we're going to be happy, right? We said that. True or false?
Absolutely.
So we're 5-0. Totally we're 5-0 with the opportunity to beat the Bucks. Now I'm not holding my breath. Okay, we're not at full strength. I don't quite know that. Who's guarding Giannis tomorrow? I'm going to guess that Jared Allen's going to give it the old college. Or he's not even. I don't know who's guarding Giannis tomorrow, Mike, for the Cavs. Who's in charge of him? Because
Jared Allen's probably get some run. He'll probably get some run on him. I would
say little double T. Get kicked out of Paris. Game. Listen, I don't know. I mean, was Pete Nance signed to a 10-day contract to guard Giannis tomorrow? I don't know.
We got to sign the whole family at some point.
Listen, the question I saw was, is he going to wear 22 now? Is Pete Nance going to wear 22? I think that would be pretty awesome. That would have been three Nances wearing the same number. I think, like, I know Pete Nance is nowhere near Larry Nance or his son, Larry Nance Jr., but I think it would be pretty cool if Pete got to wear 22 as well. Because you can't, I don't think I can ever name another father, son, and brother that all wore the same number for the same team. That would be pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, probably not. Probably hasn't happened before, I would guess.
And then people could all bust out their Nance jerseys and it would be like, we're supporting that guy. So
there you go. That's it.
Yeah. Anyways,
remains to be seen.
The Cavs, Mike, like legitimately, obviously Garland had the wires removed from his mouth. And he's been cleared for some basketball practice and contact. So you got to assume he's going to be back probably by the end of the month. I would assume his cardio is up. It's not like he's been sitting around doing nothing. I'm going to guess that he shot the basketball and dribbled the basketball. So you would think that it's not going to take him too long to be reintegrated into things. And then we haven't had a Mobley update, although it was nice to see that he did go to Paris. So he's definitely healing in some way, shape, or form, right? Like that's a positive. We're going to, you know, there was a few days after the whole situation or like a week or so that he wasn't around the team at all. And I was slightly concerned that it was worse than it was led to believe, but maybe they just kept him away. The Cavs, like, is four is their ceiling, right? Probably. Like, there's no way unless someone like ahead of them gets hurt, like Embiid or a situation arises, like, they're not going to pass Boston. I think they're 2.5 behind Philly right now. I think they're 3 behind Milwaukee. Like, is 4 their ceiling, or do you think they could get to 3?
Okay. I don't think they're getting to 3. I don't think they're getting to 2, but the honest truth is, I don't think it should be completely out of the question that should be their goal. When you look at what they've done to this point with all the injuries and the amount of lineup changes that they've had to make and the lack of time that their theoretical best five has played together, it feels like if you get all those guys healthy, and I know especially Mobley is probably the biggest if, but if you get those guys all healthy and you get them playing together and you figure out the dynamic that we've been talking about for the last 6 weeks of, is the roster redundant and can Garland and Mitchell play together and amplify each other, and can Allen and Mobley play together and amplify each other, and together when you have all four of those guys on the floor, what do you have? And that's on JB Bickerstaff and the coaching staff to figure out, what do we do, how do we make this work, what does it look like? But theoretically, you've been playing with a lot less talent than you can put on the floor when you're at your best. And so part of me says that if they could get those guys back and figure it out, that they should theoretically be able to play at a much higher level than what they've played at for most of this season. And yet, realistically, I don't think they're going to catch Milwaukee. I don't think they're probably going to catch Philly. Philly seems more tenuous only because if they lose either Embiid or Maxey for any particularly length of time, they're going to have a hard time maintaining their pace of winning without one or the other of those two guys. And so I feel like there's an outside chance that they could get to 3. I don't see them catching Milwaukee. I certainly don't see them catching Boston, but I think the most realistic finish for them is 4th in terms of on the upside. But at the same time, like I said, you are bringing back 2 all-star close to level players. Your talent is certainly going to be upgraded when Garland and Mobley are back in the lineup. And the question is, can you figure out how to max all those guys, which is what we've been saying here for a month. I don't know if that's possible. I don't know how you do it. I don't know what you have to do from a schematic standpoint to take advantage of what those guys do well and make sure that they're amplifying each other instead of just my turn, your turn in the backcourt, and instead of just getting in the way when you have Allen and Mobley both on the floor. I don't know what you do, but I do think that if everything were to break right, I could see them getting the 3rd. I don't expect it, but talent-wise, it makes sense.
Okay.
I think they're going to end up at four, Mike. I just don't think, unless something catastrophic happens to one of the big name players that we just mentioned, I just don't think it. But I will say I'm encouraged by how well they've been playing together. I've been encouraged by Jaren Allen's play. I just don't know what they're going to do with the rotation once Garland's back, like with the guards. Like, has Craig Porter Jr. even really been playing much, or has he basically been – he's been basically again.
Sam Merrill's taking his minutes.
And Sam Merrill is doing a great job, so I'm okay with it.
Merrill's right? been shooting the heck out of the ball. Yeah, I mean, he's been shooting the ball lights out, and he's brought a dimension that without – Garland sort of is that secondary scorer. You have Merrill out there to be able to space the floor.
And you know who's looked better?
The ball. Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. George Nang. He's been better. He still has. Looks he so has. Unathletic when he has the basketball in his hands. He looks so unathletic, Mike. I'm sorry, George Nang. I'm really, really sorry that I don't want you to think I'm just disparaging your name to disparage your name. But, like, whenever he has the basketball, it's like, this guy, does he know how to play basketball? And then he goes to the basket and somehow it scores or he hits a three. And, I mean, his shot looks god-awful. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, it was so robotic and just not good. And then it goes in and I'm like, oh. And then there are times, though. There are times. Oh, boy. It's not good. And then I was talking with someone else tonight about the Cavs a little bit, and we were talking about Caris LeVert, and I've come to realize, Mike, and I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before about Caris, like I think like within 30 seconds of Caris LeVert stepping foot on the floor, you know which version of Caris LeVert you're going to get. You're either going to get the one that's out of control and doesn't look like he knows what he's doing, or you're going to have the one that plays really, really, really well, and there's literally no in between. Now, what's really funny about that is you could have a half of Caris LeVert being terrible and god-awful, and then another half of Caris LeVert where he looks like he's LeBron James, the best player in the NBA. Do you agree that Caris LeVert should be diagnosed as the first basketball player that we could classify as bipolar in basketball ability?
He's definitely schizophrenic. You definitely – I mean, there's been guys that I think – over time, historically, that, hey, we bring this guy in, we see what we got, and if we got something, then he plays some extended minutes. If he doesn't, we don't play him. Now, the Cavs are kind of in position where, regardless of which LeVert they're getting, that with Garland out, they kind of need to continue to play Caris LeVert. And I've been okay with him this season. I don't love what he does because, to your point, he's been – very inconsistent. I feel like sometimes he works his way into more difficult shots than maybe if he just caught the ball and shot it.
He's a ball stopper. Once again, we've talked about this before. He's a ball stopper too, right?
But he does bring an element of something. He at least tries to do things, which I think on teams you need guys who are not.
I try to win the lottery, Mike, and I'm not successful.
I know. I get it.
I don't actually play the lottery, but no, sorry.
Think back to 2 years ago before the Donovan Mitchell trade, right? What did we discuss? That there was two guys on the roster that both kind of had the same role, and that was LeVert and Colin Sexton. And we knew we were gonna have to sign LeVert, which we ended up doing. I think we signed him to, what, a 2-year extension, if I'm not mistaken. And we ended up sending Colin Sexton to Utah in the Donovan Mitchell trade. And Sexton's been very good this year. He's playing really, really well for the Jazz. But,
and the Jazz are playing better.
Correct. Jazz have won 9 of 10. They're like 2 games above 500. I think they're 9th right now in the West. And the thing with Sexton, which goes along with Caris LeVert, is neither one of these guys are necessarily playmakers for other players. They're both guys who are score first, and LeVert has a little bit more size. I'm guessing that's why the Cavs maybe wanted to keep him. Plus, LeVert is a year or two older than Sexton with three little guards. If you had Mitchell, Garland, and Sexton as your third guard, now you've got three little guards as your rotation. At least when you bring in LeVert, he brings some size to the table defensively. So I understand why they chose LeVert. I don't think you could say it's a right choice or a wrong choice. I don't think that LeVert set the world on fire. I also don't think Sexton, based on where his positioning was with this franchise before he got traded, that he would have been all that happy being the first guard off the bench for this team. But they're similar players, and I guess what I'm saying is the Cavs had to make a choice, and they chose LeVert, and it's fine. But, I mean, I don't know. I like LeVert okay, but I could see that position at some point being upgraded and seeing LeVert play less minutes. It'll be interesting to see when his contract is up, the Cavs decide to bring him back and where they are in their team building scenarios. And, you know, the Cavs got a lot to figure out. This is going to be a big, regardless of what happens in this regular season, it's going to be a really big playoff season for them.
Yep, for sure. Where they're going from the future.
Mitchell trade talk has cooled down too.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches, with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
Mike, where do you want to, like, I don't know if you want to wrap, where do we want to wrap up tonight? Like, I'm going to let you pick the topic because, I mean, we're already at 48 minutes, which is unbelievable to me that we've been talking for 48 minutes. It does not feel like we've been talking for 48 minutes, Mike, but I'm going to let you steer the conversation about where you want to, go from
there. Let's end on a happy note. Can we end on a happy note?
Yeah, I don't even want, we're not talking Browns tonight, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay. So if you look up and down the standings, can you see where there might be a happy note for Cavs fans?
Standings. Happy note for the Cavs fans. Do we have a pick? Do we have someone's pick, Mike? Do we have someone's pick?
No, the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors.
Oh.
The Golden State Warriors.
Well, the welcome back, Draymond. Over,
the welcome dynasty back, is Draymond. Over. It's over. Can we safely say it's over at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, listen, when you look at it, okay, when you look at it, it's just, man, I just don't see how, I mean, there's still a chance that they're going to get in the playoff and the play-in, but you got to look at these teams that are ahead of them. Like, what teams can they pass? What teams can they legitimately pass up? Like, when we're looking at this, like,
just the teams that are in the play-in now, are they better than Sacramento?
No.
No. Are they better than Phoenix?
No.
Not unless Phoenix gets hurt. Caveat.
Which is happening.
Big
which
three play together tonight, which very easily could happen. But Phoenix getting hurt, even if Phoenix loses one of those guys, the other two should be enough to keep them around 500, yeah. What's going to keep them in the play-in. Utah is the team, I think, that currently most sits likely. Number nine, that you would say maybe they're going to fall out. But again, Utah's won 9 out of their last 10. And Markkanen's going to be an all-star again. And they have one of the best coaches in the league in Will Hardy. And the Utah Jazz have a ton of pieces. I don't think that maybe they make a small trade, but I don't think Utah is going to be in full-on sell mode, which is what we thought they were going to be in the last 2 years, and they haven't really gotten there.
Yep.
The Lakers at number 10, say what you want about the Lakers and how bad their season has gone to this point. They're going to make some deals. The Lakers are going to stay improve in the play-in mix. They're going to get better. Their roster is going to, at least it's going to change. I don't know if it'll necessarily be better, but their roster is definitely going to change. Houston still sits above Golden State. Houston wants to win. Houston isn't trying to lose. So you got to think they're going to hang around somewhere near that bottom of the plane. Because basically you're looking at, once you get beyond Golden State, Memphis, Portland, and San Antonio, I mean, you mentioned it earlier with Ja out for the season, Bane's new injury.
Marcus Smart out for 6 weeks.
Right. Memphis just doesn't have enough, and Portland and San Antonio clearly aren't trying to win. So you're basically looking at 12 teams in the West for 10 spots. And I just don't think – I think it's over for Golden State. I really do. And you hear lots of the trades that are out there, and I hear people saying, well, they could trade Wiggins, and maybe you trade Draymond, or they're not going to trade Clay. To me, who at this point – wants Andrew Wiggins. Now, I know he went to Golden State and was sort of a reclamation project, but the culture that was in place in Golden State and the veterans that were there kind of got him turned around. And then whatever personal turmoil he went through last year, he's just never been the same guy that he was in that 2022 finals where he was – I mean, he was the second best player on the team, and he has not even come close to approaching that level in any way, shape, or form. And – look, Steph continues to play at a really high level, but the honest truth is that he's not playing nearly to the level that he's played the last several years. And he's only averaging 26 a game, which is down 2, 3, 4 points from where he's been at his apex. He's only averaging less than 5 assists, so 4.9, shooting less than 40% from 3, only shooting 44% overall. He hasn't been as good, and they just don't have the same level of roster around him. And I don't see it turning around for this team. And to be honest, I just don't see, unless they want to package some draft assets and a couple of those younger guys to maybe get a veteran role player. Is that really what they want to do? Maybe. I mean, I guess you're trying to maximize what window you have left with Steph. But I just don't see anything that this team can do that's going to take them to the level that they are accustomed to and that they want to get to. I think the Golden State dynasty is on its way out. And maybe they crawl their way into the play-in, and maybe they crawl their way through the play-in and get into the playoffs, but they are going to be an early round exit in the playoffs at best, I think, this year. I think that's the best you can hope for if you're a Warriors fan.
That was a rather cold, cold attack on the Golden State Warriors, Mike. Almost like we are celebrating a cold day tomorrow in the state of area of Cleveland, Ohio. I'm really surprised that didn't even lead off the podcast, Mike, with that tonight, that we had the news of us both having
it's a positive.
You more impressively having the day off, because
we didn't rarely call off till there were already 400 schools that had called off before we did. So,
yeah. Anyways, listen, I agree though. Golden State, put a fork in it. It's over. And like, they're not going to, I agree with you. They're not going to trade Clay. They're just not going to do it. Is Clay's contract up at the end of this year?
Yes.
Or does he have another year?
So he's a, no, he is. He's expiring. $43 million. So
he'll go somewhere. He'll go somewhere probably, right? He'll probably go somewhere
break
else.
Him up? That's the question. That's the question for the offseason, right? Are they going to break those three guys up? Is Golden State willing to either let Clay walk?
Well, Steph's not leaving.
No, Steph's not leaving. That's what I'm saying. But are they willing to trade either of those other two guys? Are they willing to let Clay walk in free agency? They signed Draymond to a 4-year extension, which hasn't even kicked in yet. That contract is not going to age well, I can tell you that. So it seems like maybe a contender, if Golden State was willing to trade him, maybe a contender talks themselves into, hey, Draymond, he's going to bring this toughness and attitude and whatever, and he's got these problems of just whacking dudes for no reason behind him. I don't know. I don't know if I see – to me, I wouldn't want to touch Draymond with a 10-foot pole if I was another team. And if you're the Warriors and you're stuck with him for 4 years, I'm not sure you're going to be happy about what you're going to get back out of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Draymond and Klay are gone next year, Mike. That's my bold prediction. I think they're gone.
Probably be the best move from a purely, if you look at it purely as a business decision and trying to put the best roster you can around Steph, I think that probably makes sense. Just because of, again, the virtue and nature of how much money you're going to have to pay Klay Thompson and what you've already agreed to pay Draymond Green. I just, you're talking about that being your big three. No, there's a reason why Golden State's four games under 500 right now, and that's your big three. It's just they're not good enough anymore to be able to pull that off. So
I agree, Mike. All right, anything else you want to talk about?
I think we hit on just about all the big storylines that I wanted to hit. Of course, there's more things. The Lakers are going to be looking for trades. You have Utah's rise, which we talked about and touched on a little bit. You've got potential Sacramento Kings. Yeah, Clippers really playing well. I don't want to say eat crow, because clearly the only reason why you acquire James Harden if you lost the Angeles Clippers, well, I shouldn't say that. The reason why you acquire James Harden is to try to make a run in the playoffs. You're trying to win a title. That's what the Clippers are trying to do. I know they're going to try to fill seats in their new arena next year, and they're probably going to sign James Harden to a massive contract in the offseason that is not going to age well. And it's all kumbaya right now, but it's been kumbaya for a period of time in all the other places that James Harden's been. And at some point, he's going to sour on the situation. And we can guarantee that at some point in the playoffs, the Clippers are going to need him, and he's not going to be there. And I feel very, very confident in saying that. Kudos to the Clippers and to Harden for turning things around from the start when he first arrived in LA, and they're playing very well. They beat the Thunder tonight, but I'm just not buying it long-term as a playoff reality. I just don't see it. So kudos to the Clippers for playing well in the regular season, but man, I don't think it's going to happen in the playoffs. I would be stunned beyond belief. And okay. I guess kudos to Minnesota for being first place in the Western Conference this far along in the season. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't know. Trade season's coming, so we'll probably talk some more trades as we move along here, but that's all I got.
Okay. Sounds good, Mike.
Perfect.
I think we'll leave it there. Here's what I want to talk about really quickly, though. Not the Browns. Sure. We're not talking about the Browns.
Okay.
Listen. How bad are you going to feel when the man, the myth, the legend, Baker Mayfield, comes to Detroit and beats your Lions?
He's not beating the Lions. There's no way he's beating the Lions. He's not beating the Lions in that dome. There's no way. There's no way. It's not going to happen.
Oh, okay. I know. I don't think it's going to happen.
Listen, part of me is rooting for Baker.
I'm not lying to you.
I'm happy for Baker. I know that on this podcast, I said numerous times that I didn't think Baker Mayfield was an elite quarterback, and I still don't. But he's a guy that won with the Browns. He's now won with Tampa Bay. I think when he's healthy, and look, that last season in Cleveland, he clearly played through an injury, which I bet if you asked him to sit down honestly and injected him with true serum and said, hey, should you have played, or if you had that to do over again, would you play? He'd probably sit, and then the Browns would assign him to a huge extension, and he comes back healthy, and he is what he is. I don't know that he's a top 10 quarterback in the league, but I also don't think he's a bottom 10 quarterback in the league. I think he slots somewhere in the middle where if you have a good team around him, I think you can probably win with him. I think that he's not an elite quarterback. He's not. And the Deshaun Watson that played quarterback for the Houston Texans was an elite quarterback. And since he's been here in Cleveland, we have not seen that guy. Maybe the second half of the Ravens game. And then, of course, he got hurt. And it all went away. And now we lost to a team that we gave three first-round draft picks to. And C.J. Stroud looks like he's going to be a top-five quarterback based on what we saw in that game and based on his rookie year. So,
I'm rooting for Houston to beat Baltimore this weekend. I'm rooting for it.
Agreed.
Sorry. I'm rooting I'm torn on the Buffalo Kansas City game, but I think I'm going to root for Buffalo because,
tortured franchise.
They haven't won. I'm going to root for the Packers, Mike. I'm going to root for the Packers to upset San Francisco. And then I'd be happy with the
championship to Detroit.
I would honestly be happy with either Detroit or the Buccaneers to win it all. I know the Buccaneers had 2 years of Tom Brady, but it's just purely because of Baker. I will root for the Buccaneers. If they win, I'll be sad for Detroit, but I'll be happy for Baker. And if Detroit wins, I'll be happy for Detroit, sad for Baker. Is that fair?
That's fair. That's fair.
So
it would be insane to have Detroit in the Super Bowl. It would be insane.
Did you see that the Buccaneers Lions game is the highest selling average rate price ticket for a divisional round game in NFL Detroit, history? Do you want to take a stab at it?
What was previous or what the average ticket?
What the average ticket cost is right now? Like. If you were
I'm
to go,
say $220,
$1,188.
Wow. Holy cow. I'd be happy to watch that game from my couch.
That's the average ticket price. You could get in right now. I think I saw you could get in right now for $750.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it was loud. It was loud in there against the Rams. It's going to be even louder against Tampa. There's no doubt about that. But we'll see.
Alrighty. We'll leave it there, Mike.
Perfect. Thanks everybody for listening tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.